Hey y'all, this is Mark. Welcome to episode 201. Today's episode is your complete guide to how to do Mardi Gras. It was originally released years ago, but it's still relevant today. We've been getting a lot of questions about Mardi Gras in the Facebook group, what to do, where to find bathrooms, that sort of thing. So I thought it would be good to pull this one from the archives. Before we jump in, let me talk about the people that make the podcast possible. Support comes from the Historic New Orleans Collection, the city's premier history museum located at 520 Royal Street in the heart of the French Quarter. Check out their online publication called First Draft. It's a combination blog and online exhibition space at hnoc.org/firstdraft. Through May 10, 2024, check out their exhibit titled The Mystic Brotherhood, Fraternal Orders of New Orleans. For centuries, Freemasons, Odd Fellows, and other similar fraternal organizations have contributed to the network of benevolent and mutual aid societies that cradle New Orleans' social, cultural, and civic life. Through objects and images drawn from their collection, the new exhibition explores the sometimes hidden history of these organizations and illuminates how they helped shape today's city. Additionally, their permanent exhibit on the French Quarter life is an immersive experience worth a visit. As always, the Historic New Orleans Collection is free. Go to hnoc.org/visit to plan your trip. If you own a copy of the Beyond Bourbon Street Travel Guide, you've seen the work of James Cullen of Accidental Cajun Photography. Whether it's portraits, events, weddings, or lifestyle, or photojournalism, Accidental Cajun Photography provides quality and value. James also offers photography instruction and sells his fine art prints at theaccidentalcajun.com. For inquiries, email James at accidentalcajun@gmail.com. Now let's jump into the show. We'll be back soon with new content. In the meantime, enjoy this one and happy Mardi Gras, y'all.
You're listening to Beyond Bourbon Street, an insider's guide to New Orleans. Beyond Bourbon Street is the podcast where we explore the food, music, culture, places, and people that make New Orleans unique. Whether you are planning a trip, living in New Orleans, or simply wanting a taste of the Crescent City from wherever you are, you've come to the right place. And now, your host, Mark Bologna.
Hi, everyone. This is Mark. Thanks for tuning in to episode 4. It's been great to hear from so many of you who've listened to the first couple of shows. A special thanks to those of you who've taken the time to leave a rating on iTunes. We're up to 31 reviews now, including ADJ D. Leon, Nola Mom 504, Tasha 4N6, Mel Mill, and 9Felix99, who wrote, "Mark loves New Orleans and it shows." I sure do, Felix. Thanks. If any of you leave me a review, I'll mention it on an upcoming episode. I really appreciate the feedback and support, y'all, and it makes a big difference in helping others discover this little community we're creating here. As you can tell, I have my Mardi Gras voice, after a weekend of enjoying beautiful weather and a host of parades. I was worried about it at first, then I remembered here at Beyond Bourbon Street, we try to give you the insider's perspective. This voice is a real-world example of what you can expect after a couple days out on the parade route. The show must go on, so let's get this party started. In the last episode, we discussed the history of Mardi Gras, Carnival, Twelfth Night, and King Kicks. If you missed that one, you might want to go back and listen. This show will be a little different, though. I'll certainly provide some education and history, but this is going to be loaded with insider tips. Buckle up and get something to take notes with, or just listen to it over and over again. This one is going to be full of actionable content, and I'll even have something for those of you who won't be coming to New Orleans. By the way, what's up with that? All right, in the spirit of Mardi Gras, I had planned on drinking a frosty beverage out of a go cup, but given my voice, I decided to stick with tea. I debated how to structure this show, and after way too much analysis, I decided to group it into a couple parts. In the first section, we'll talk about things to do before you come to New Orleans for Mardi Gras. The season's actually called Carnival, as you learned in episode 3, but the terms are often used interchangeably, and that's what we'll do in this show. In the next section, we'll talk about what to do once you're here. After that, we'll get into some detail about the different time periods in parade season, which really amps up about 2 weekends before Mardi Gras. Then we'll close out the show by telling you how we do Mardi Gras, and I'll also explain the name Beyond Bourbon Street. So let's jump in. All right, in segment 1, pre-travel. In order to make your experience the best possible, it's a good idea to spend a little time planning. Mardi Gras truly has something for everyone. When I hear people having a poor experience, it's usually because they didn't match their actions with their expectations. And in this section, we're going to help you do just that. Let's start with an inventory of you. And here's some questions to help. Who are you and what do you like? Are you the party animal or are you the quiet observer at a cocktail party? You know, the one who takes it all in with an amused smile on your face. Are you more likely to paint your face at a football game or do you enjoy the view from a skybox? Who are you traveling with? Your spouse or partner? Kids? A big group? What about crowds? Are you comfortable being part of a sea of humanity or do you prefer a little room to spread out? Do you like to drink alcohol? What's your reaction to the idea of costumes? Do you like to dress up or does that make you roll your eyes? Are you interested but prefer to observe rather than take part? Do you have children and will they be coming to Mardi Gras with you? When are you visiting? For purposes of parades, as I mentioned, things really get started 2 weekends before Mardi Gras. Sometimes your decision about when to visit gets made for you, maybe because of other considerations like work or school. In other cases, maybe you have the freedom to choose when to travel. What is your budget? Do you know anyone who lives here, and will they be in town? Many schools in New Orleans are closed during the week of Mardi Gras. As a result, a lot of families choose to go on vacation that week and avoid the madness. Others split the difference and leave on Wednesday. Will you have a car? And more specifically, will you be driving to get to New Orleans, or will you fly? My opinion is, if you don't need a car to get here, don't rent one. We'll talk about that a little bit later on in the show. And where do you fall on the boob meter? That's right, I created a special boob meter just for this show. 0 on a scale of 0 to 100 means, oh no, come on, I have kids and that's the last thing I need to see. A score of 50 would be, I'm indifferent. I'm not going to freak out if I see some nakedness, but I don't really care one way or the other. A score of 75 would be, sure, why not? I mean, I'm in New Orleans for Mardi Gras after all. And a score of 100 means definitely. Heck, I might even wear body paint as my costume. Your answers to these questions will help you make your decisions, and I really think it's a key to enjoying Mardi Gras. Well, that and having a place to pee, but we'll get to that important topic later on. Now, let's talk about what types of accommodations are available and what areas you might consider in terms of location in the city. First, what types of accommodations? You could rent a house on VRBO. You could use Airbnb, which is a little controversial in New Orleans right about now, but I get that a lot of people use it. You could stay at a bed and breakfast. You could stay at a hotel. Or there's an RV park right out the back of the French Quarter. And it's not the best place to walk from, particularly in the evening, but it would be a great location to stay if you're coming in an RV. And you could hop in a cab or an Uber and get around just fine and have a relatively inexpensive place to stay for Mardi Gras. So when you think about where to stay, go back to the questions I asked a couple minutes ago. Your expectations and your budget, who you're traveling with, all those things will help determine what will be the best fit for you. One note, I would plan either very early or very, very late. And the reason is that most of the hotels in prime locations are going to be booked sometimes a year in advance. They also require minimum stays, especially once you get to the Friday before Mardi Gras. They do tend to release some rooms, but you're taking a chance. And I wouldn't do that unless you're adventurous, not dead set on being here, or maybe if you don't have kids. If you want to spend most of your time in the French Quarter, look for a hotel in the quarter or in the Central Business District or Warehouse District. You'll find plenty of options, from boutique hotels to large national brands. The Sheraton on Canal Street's a nice blend in that it's on the edge of the quarter, but it also has stands right out front for viewing the parades that pass along Canal Street. In the heart of the French Quarter are places like the Bourbon Orleans, the Royal Orleans, and the Prince Conti, just to name a few. A sneaky play is the Best Western in the French Quarter. It tends to host the party crowd, but it's nicer than you might expect for a Best Western. And if you're looking to be in the quarter for Mardi Gras, you're probably on the party end of the equation anyway. In general, I recommend the area from Canal Street to Lee Circle, encompassing the border between the French Quarter and the Central Business District, and continuing into the Warehouse District. Just past Lee Circle, you reach the Garden District, which doesn't have too many hotel options. A little further uptown, there's a couple nice places right on St. Charles, but the CBD and the Warehouse District give you a good blend. You can head into the quarter if that's what you want, or you have a wealth of parade viewing options. It's tough to recommend specific hotels because so much depends on your budget and on how early you plan. If I had to recommend one hotel, Almost regardless of your situation, though, I think it'd be the Renaissance Arts in the Warehouse District on Chapultepec Street. I like this hotel because it's in a great location, and it's just the right size. Most of the parades pass within a couple blocks of the hotel, and two of the biggest, Bacchus and Orpheus, parade right in front. The Renaissance is an easy walk to the French Quarter, and you have a host of dining options nearby. Additionally, I like the size of the hotel. It's only 4 floors tall, so if you want to run back in, say to go to the bathroom or grab a snack or a beer from your room, or just take a break, you don't have to wait for elevators. Sometimes in the big hotels, this can be a problem, and it's something to think about. In any event, keep this hotel in mind, not just for Carnival, but for any visit to New Orleans. The one downside to staying in the CBD or the Warehouse District is that you're further down the parade route. This means the parades arrive at your location sometimes hours after they start, and that can make for a really long day. It's something to consider anyway, especially if you got young kids. We've also had friends rent a home on Napoleon Avenue along with a couple of families. That's right at the start of the Uptown parade route. And if you can find something like this, it would be a great option. It'd particularly be great if you have kids or if your idea of partying involves spending the day out on the route enjoying food and drink and parades, whether you got kids or not. This would not be the option if you want to spend a lot of time in the French Quarter or if you're the one that liked the idea of wearing body paint as your costume. That's going to be a very family-friendly area, and they're not going to take too well to you walking down the street with nothing but paint on. One other point. Stay somewhere on or really close to the parade route, and stay in New Orleans. Every year, I see people asking online about staying in Metairie or Kenner, suburbs of New Orleans. You could do it, but you'll be encountering transportation problems, and in my opinion, you're going to lose out on the best of Carnival, that is, immersing yourself in the community. Another thing is that the days can be long. Why would you want to compete with thousands of others looking for a taxi or an Uber? And you certainly don't want to be driving if you've been enjoying an adult beverage or two. Even if you haven't, you can be assured many people are. It's just not the best time to be driving in New Orleans. To me, Mardi Gras is all about being a part of the community. You're going to want to get out on the route early with plenty of time to settle in and meet your neighbors. You might also want to linger afterwards, or wander off just before the last couple floats appear and duck in someplace for a meal. You won't do those things if you're worried about commuting back to a hotel outside the city. One caveat on this recommendation. If you're staying with friends who live here and know the place, then by all means, stay with them if they'll have you. Even if they live in the suburbs, they're probably going to know their way around, and plus, they'll probably be willing to drive, so then you won't have to. All right, enough about where to stay and types of accommodations. Let's talk clothing. Dress appropriately. Starting with your shoes, and I can't overstate this one. Ladies, please don't wear high heels. Flip-flops are not the best idea either. Wear comfortable shoes that you don't mind getting dirty. It can be a long day, and the streets can get pretty gross, especially if it's been raining. My wife has Mardi Gras tennis shoes. They're an old pair of black running shoes. Perfect. They're comfortable and they hide dirt. She hoses them out when we get home. There's another reason footwear is important, and this leads to an insider tip, doubloons. Though they've diminished in popularity, doubloons are basically large coins thrown in some parades. They're usually made out of an anodized aluminum, and they come in a variety of colors, though the best known is probably the gold one thrown by the members of the Rex Parade. Rex was the first to offer the doubloon when they started the practice back in 1960. On one side is the insignia of the carnival crew, and on the other is the theme of the parade for that year. Often when doubloons are tossed, they end up hitting the ground. Do not try to pick them up. Rather, you want to step on it with your foot, then calmly lean over, move your foot out of the way, and pick it up. See the problem? If you're wearing flip-flops, your foot's going to get smashed. And if you're wearing heels, you'll get knocked over, or you might even break a heel. This is really a twofer insider tip, now that I think about it. Don't ever reach for a doubloon without first stomping on it. You'll almost certainly get your hand stepped on, and it'll probably be by the aggressive grandma who was born and raised here, and could tell you about back when Rex paraded an actual bull through the streets instead of a papier-mâché Le Bouffe Gras. If you think I'm kidding, my grandma's 99 years old, and she's the one that would push you out of the way, and she could certainly remember the bull parading through the streets. And I hear some of you now, oh, I would never get caught up chasing after cheap items like beads and doubloons. I'll be fine in my nice clothes. Oh, yeah? Why don't you write and tell me about it after you spilled that strawberry daiquiri down the front of your cream-colored silk blouse, stained the neck of it with a pair of green beads, and broken a fingernail trying to pick up a Bacchus to bloom when some 4-year-old smashes down on you with a pair of Star Wars light-up kids. Look, we all get caught up in it, and you should. It's the greatest free show on earth, after all. Put on your jeans, your old running shoes, or hiking boots. If you must be fashionable, get a Mardi Gras rugby shirt from Perlis when you come to town, or a tricolored scarf. Try not to knock that kid down over the stuffed animal, though. He really wants it, and you're going to scar him for life. I'm just saying, might have happened to me once. Wear layers. I can't tell you how many times I've been at a parade, and I end up standing next to someone from out of town. The conversation usually goes something like this. Hey, man, where you from? Visitor. Well, I'm from Ohio. It could be New York or Michigan or Minnesota. Pretty much anywhere that gets cold. Me. Are you having a good time? Visitor. Yeah, but it's a lot colder than we thought. Where we live, 50 degrees is nothing, but we're freezing out here. The thing people underestimate in New Orleans is the dampness. We're in a freaking swamp, people. It's wet. Not the ground, the air. I lived in Minnesota for 2 years, and the difference is the humidity. 50 degrees here is chilly, and when it gets to 40 and below, it can be bone-chilling, especially when you're outside for hours. When I lived in Minnesota, it got cold, certainly, but when it got back up to, say, 30 or 35 degrees, it kind of felt balmy. I know that sounds a little crazy, particularly to my friends here in Louisiana. But after you got used to it, you could go outside in your shirt sleeves and be fine for a while. You don't want to do that at Mardi Gras. You'll end up being miserable. Here's another insider tip. If you use sunscreen on your neck, don't put beads around your neck. The sunscreen, it does something to the colors of the beads, and you're going to end up staining both your neck and your clothes. So another option is to wear a dark shirt. It'll also help hide all the spills and the dirt, and it's the option I usually go with. Another point, wear a hat. It's often sunny, no matter the temperature, and you'll get sunburned before you know it. And you know what's not fun? That moment when you put a pair of beads around your neck and you feel the sting when you rub them across your crispy skin. I know this section's supposed to be about clothes, but I'm on a roll now, so I'm going to stick with it. One of the hazards of Mardi Gras are flying beads. They hurt when they hit, especially if they hit your face, and it happens all the time. Speaking from experience, when you ride on a float, you're so excited. You might also be a little intoxicated. Next thing you know, you see a cute kid or a friendly face in the crowd, an attractive man or a woman. You make eye contact and you decide to throw them some beads. It can be a fair distance and you're on a moving float, and it takes some effort. If you judge any of those variables incorrectly, you can end up smacking someone across the face. This doesn't happen a ton, but it does happen every day, so it's not like you're going to get hit in the face the moment you walk out on the parade route, but it's something you want to be aware of. If you wear a hat, particularly like a baseball cap, it can really help minimize the risk of getting hit in the face because the bill might deflect the beads. It's a particular hazard for small kids sitting on their dad's shoulders or in a parade ladder. Every year I think about developing the Mardi Gras shield. It would have a purple, green, and gold hard hat component with a ventilated plastic shield that could flip down. If you take this idea and bring it to market, I want one. I probably need a size large. All right, let's recap the clothing before we move on. Wear comfortable shoes that you don't mind getting dirty. Dress in layers. Wear a hat and sunglasses during the day. It's also useful to wear pants with a decent amount of pockets as opposed to skin-tight jeans. At least as a dad, I know it's much better to go out in cargo shorts or cargo pants because the kids are going to end up putting all kinds of stuff in my pockets, whether it's throws or they want a snack or a bottle of water, whatever it might be. So it's nice to have some extra places to store things. All right, segment 2. Let's go see the Mardi Gras. All right, you're here. You finally got to New Orleans. You got your party down here to the party, and you found the perfect place to stay. Now what? In this section, we'll help you create the essential Mardi Gras toolkit. We'll also talk about transportation and parking and some logistics. And the all-important question, where are you going to pee? Basically, all the stuff you need to think about before you walk out the door. So let's go. First, let's get you a toolkit. Here's the first rule of Mardi Gras. Travel as light as you can and be self-sustaining. As for my family, we got the second part down pat. It's the traveling light piece we need to work on. But never mind, let's get you set up. Here's what I think you need. First, a backpack, because you're going to have a lot of stuff with you. Next, you want to pick up a copy of Arthur Hardy's Mardi Gras Guide. So Mr. Hardy is known as Mr. Mardi Gras, and I call him Mr. Hardy because he was my high school band teacher back in the day. He's put out a magazine-style Mardi Gras guide for 40 years. It's a great thing to have with you because it's going to show you the parade routes. It's going to show you the times each parade starts, what day each parade is on. It's also going to give you a little bit of history about each organization and tell you what they're going to throw this year, maybe a little bit of lanyap information, a little bit something extra. He's also got some articles about the general history of Mardi Gras and lots of things. So pretty much any question you're going to want to know while you're out on the parade route, you can find it in Arthur Hardy's Mardi Gras Guide. And it's $5. You can pick it up online ahead of time. Or once you get to New Orleans, you can buy it at the airport, in fact. You can find it at every grocery store and most convenience stores. This year, for the first time, he's released an app. So if you look up Arthur Hardy's Mardi Gras Guide in the App Store on iTunes or on Android, you'll be able to find it and download it. The next thing you want to do is download a parade tracking app. A couple of the television stations have some really good apps. One is WWL and the other is WDSU. So if you go into the App Store and search for Mardi Gras Parade Tracker or Mardi Gras Parade Guide, you'll be able to find them and download whichever one looks good to you. I have both of them on my phone. They're really helpful because while parades do have a start time, there's sometimes delays. So floats break down, people might get hurt or get sick on the parade route, or sometimes the parades come one after another. And when that happens, if there's any kind of problem with one of the early parades or one of the floats in those early parades, it can cause sort of a domino effect and the later parades might get delayed. So if you're out on the route, it's good to know. And if you got the parade tracking app, you'll be able to look it up and see it instantly. In addition, you want to bring some snacks and water. You want to bring any medicine you need, a battery backup, and a cable for your phone. Because again, you're going to be out for quite a while. And if you're using the parade tracking app or trying to catch up with friends, obviously the battery could run down. It's good to have some toilet paper with you. Wet wipes are also handy, particularly if you got kids. Sanitizing hand gel is another thing that comes in really handy. We usually throw some plastic bags, just a couple of grocery bags in the backpack, in case something gets muddy or dirty. And additionally, we pack a couple of Ziploc bags. That way, if it starts to rain, you want to throw your phone and your money or your wallet in it. You have a place to put it. You also want something to put throws into, especially with kids. So you're going to catch a lot of throws from the riders on the floats. And the kids especially are going to want to keep it. On Mardi Gras Day particularly, you want to make sure you have more bags than you think you need because the kids are going to catch all kinds of stuff. In addition to beads, they're going to catch a lot of trinkets and toys and some little stuffed animals. And so, the kids are going to want to keep some of that stuff. So make sure you're prepared for it. In addition, you want to pack some sunscreen. As I mentioned earlier, even when the weather's cold, it can be pretty sunny. And before you know it, you don't think about it. You're out there a couple hours, you rub the back of your neck, and you realize you're cooked. It's also a good idea to take a couple of those canned koozies with you. The collapsible ones that'll fit in your pocket. You never know when you're going to have a drink in your hand. And it's nice to have that to put the can inside and keep it cool. On the optional list, and this would really be if you're traveling, if you're not traveling so light, maybe if you have a car, you're with a big group, some of those chairs that fold up and fit into a bag, it's nice to have those. Maybe a blanket or something that you can throw on the ground if you want to sit down. An ice chest with some drinks and food, and then maybe a parade ladder, which we'll talk about in just a second. The real key is to bring the essentials for you and your group and little else. Having said that, let me talk about the parade ladder for a minute. This is essential for any New Orleans family with kids. Basically, it's a 6-foot ladder with a wooden box on top. The box is usually homemade, though you can buy them at a couple of the small neighborhood hardware stores here. The box has a back and sides, but no front. So picture it's about 3 feet wide by about 12 inches deep and about 12 inches tall. Across the front, where the open space is a wooden dowel. The dowel slides through holes that are put in each side and secured in place with a bolt or a pin. So you take the box and you mount it with some bolts into the top of the ladder. Then you put the kids in the box and an adult stands behind them on the rungs of the ladder to anchor the whole thing and to help the kids catch throws. It serves several purposes. The kids can see because they're up above the crowds. You don't have to worry about them running around in the street, and they're attractive targets for the masked float riders. I know this must sound crazy, but trust me, anyone who grew up here has fond memories of their parade ladder. It's a New Orleans tradition. And if you're out on the route and someone offers to let your child get in the ladder, take them up on it. My kids and I spent much of this past weekend up on the ladder, and I'll post a picture of it on the website over at www.beyondbourbonst.com. You'll see them all over the parade routes as well. All right, now you have your toolkit. Let's talk about safety for a minute. No doubt you've heard stories about how bad crime is in New Orleans. And on the one hand, some of it's true. The police force is definitely understaffed post-Katrina here. On the other hand, this is a big city. And like all big cities, we have our share of crime. For the most part, if you use common sense, stay with the crowds, and avoid poorly lit places off the beaten path, you should be fine. Here's a couple tips to follow. First, leave the jewelry at home, or at the very least locked in the safe in your room. And there's a couple reasons. One, you don't want to make yourself an easy target by displaying jewelry. The second is that rings and watches can get easily tangled up with Mardi Gras beads. I've seen people lose rings or have the prongs on engagement rings get damaged. I've had more than one watch pulled off my arm when a pair of beads gets wrapped around the face, and then someone pulls at the beads, they don't really realize, right? Next thing you know, it's pulled the pin out and your watch falls on the ground. The other thing that can happen is your ring can go flying off as you wave your hands in the air, especially if the weather's cool or if you've been eating something like, I don't know, fried chicken and you have greasy fingers. I'm just saying, it's better to leave the jewelry off. This weekend, I forgot that tip and I had to shove my wedding ring into that little pocket on the front of your jeans because it was sliding off before I realized. Another common sense point that bears repeating is to put your money, your credit cards, all that stuff in your front pants pockets. Even better is to wrap a rubber band around them, so it makes it a little bit more difficult to pull those items out of your pockets. If you decide to wander onto Bourbon Street to take in the craziness, you'll undoubtedly see throngs of people looking up at the balconies. They have their arms outstretched, begging for beads. If you're lucky enough to get on a balcony, there's something else you can spot if you're looking for it. When the crowd gets really worked up, watch the pickpockets swarm in. A friend of ours who's a policeman actually showed us this one year from up on a balcony. Sure enough, a woman lifted up her shirt at the urging of somebody on a balcony, and the crowd went nuts. And then three or four people immediately went into the fray lifting wallets. You could just see them come from the corners of the crowd. Keep in mind, sometimes these folks work in groups, so one person deliberately causes a scene to create a distraction, and that way the others can prey upon the unsuspecting people in the crowd. I had no idea you could actually witness it, but we were up there watching with this policeman, and he said, just watch, and sure enough, you could see people go into the crowd and immediately dart back out. A different type of safety tip has to do with interacting with the parades themselves. The floats are big, and they're pulled by tractors in most cases. Every year or two, somebody gets run over. Invariably, someone gets too close to the side of a float, or they're looking ahead, and they run right in the front of a tractor. Particularly tragic are cases when a child runs after some throw and ends up under a float. These things are easily preventable by watching out for your party and for the others around you. In general, I gotta say, the crowd is really good about this and about taking care of others. But you do want to be mindful, especially at the big parades. The crowds can get really thick, and while there's barricades in a lot of places, sometimes you can end up really close to the floats. I'm certainly not trying to scare you by any means. Given the number of people and everything that's going on and all the distractions, Mardi Gras is a really safe, fun event. Just a little precaution and awareness can help ensure you have a great time. Next up, let's talk about parking because I get a lot of questions about this. My advice is don't have a car if you can avoid it. However, if you drive into town or for whatever reason decide you're going to rent a vehicle, here's some tips. Option one, pay for parking along the parade route. Some schools and churches along or really close to the route offer parking, usually by reservation, and the price varies by day. It gets more expensive, as you might imagine, for the biggest parades and on Mardi Gras. Sacred Heart Academy on this corner of Napoleon and St. Charles is a great spot. Another one just down St. Charles towards downtown is New Orleans Seafood and Hamburger. They usually offer a package deal of parking and inside access, which means bathrooms. On the other side of St. Charles, the riverside, about two blocks in the direction opposite from the direction the parades are traveling, there's St. George's Episcopal Church. While they don't have parking, in most years they offer free bathrooms and they sell food, and you can usually park just a block or two further down without too much trouble, and then you got a place to go to the bathroom, you got a place to get some food. In fact, a lot of churches along the route do this. They sell food, and they might have the bathrooms open for no charge, so keep your eye out, particularly if you're wandering around. Another option is to park a car ahead of time. This requires some planning and some effort. So you park the car in a good spot near the route, then you leave it. I would go for a walk or a run, take the streetcar back to where everybody is. You get transportation back to the route for the parade, then you pick up your car afterwards. This is also useful if you have kids and if you have a ton of stuff. We actually do a variation on this theme for the big parades and for Mardi Gras. I go out early or even the night before. I leave my car in the best spot I can find, then I head home. Sometimes I run, or other times I take the streetcar. When it's time to go to the parade, we pile into the minivan and drive back to where my car is parked. If we find a good spot along the way, we park. If not, I hop out and move my car while my wife pulls in with the minivan. I drive and go find the best spot I can. Usually it's just a few blocks away, maybe a half mile is about the furthest I've ever had to park. Then I walk back and meet them. It might seem like a lot, but it ensures us of a good spot for the car. And this is really important when you're going to be out on the route for a while or if the weather's not great. Especially with young kids like ours, you never know what's going to happen when they're going to have had enough or somebody just needs a break, and it's nice to have the car right there. Years ago, before my wife and I moved back to New Orleans, we'd come home for Mardi Gras. One year we stayed at the Sheraton on Canal Street, which is a good central spot, by the way. After I dropped my wife off with our stuff, I drove the car into the Garden District, found a quiet street, and left it. I think I ran back to the hotel that year, though I might have taken a streetcar. We left it there for a couple days, then I went back and retrieved it. One note if you do this, some streets and areas are marked residential, so you definitely want to check that out. If you leave a car like this, you run the risk of a parking ticket, though it's almost certainly going to be cheaper than parking at a hotel. One final option, park away from the route and walk. This is fun if you're traveling light and you don't have kids with you. I like to park on St. Charles on the uptown side of Napoleon, basically on St. Charles in the opposite direction from the way the parades are heading. You'll understand this when you see it in person. Others park even further down and take the streetcar back. Again, my best tip on this is to avoid driving if you can. Before we had kids and were living out of town, we'd come home from Mardi Gras, as I mentioned a moment ago. Some of our best experiences were staying downtown and walking the length of the route with only a backpack. We would stop, watch the parades, grab a beer here and there. Invariably, we'd see some friends along the way. If we made it all the way to the beginning of the parade, we'd usually meet up with my parents and maybe get a ride back downtown. And if not, we knew the worst case was a long but leisurely walk back to the hotel. It's a colorful and fun way to experience Mardi Gras. You get to see the various ways people are celebrating. You really get to see the costumes, just the feel of the experience. It's still one of my favorite ways to do it, and every chance we get, we take the kids for a walk down the parade route. The streets get closed off before the parade, and the atmosphere has a carnival feel to it, pun intended. All right, one last general item I think we need to cover. Where to pee. This is a big deal. Don't underestimate it. You're out on the parade route for hours. You might be enjoying a beer or two like me. And if you have kids, they're certainly going to need to go at some point. New Orleans is a pretty tolerant town, but the easiest way to get arrested during carnival is to pee in public. Many of us have done it at some point. But if you get caught, you're probably getting arrested for indecent exposure. And you're not going to find yourself getting processed and released quickly, especially over the weekend before Mardi Gras. You could be in Orleans Parish Prison for a little while, which is definitely not the experience you're hoping for. There is some good news, though. With just a little planning, you'll be fine. Again, the corner of St. Charles and Napoleon is where you'll find Sacred Heart Academy. And as a fundraiser, the men's club at the school sells wristbands that allow access to their porta-potties, which they clean after every use. Some of the churches along the route, as I mentioned earlier, they'll allow you to go in and use the facilities for free, though it changes from year to year in terms of which ones are open. I think Sacred Heart's the best option going, frankly, and that's where we try to go each year. But another option is a restaurant or a bar. Most require that you make a purchase, and the lines can sometimes be long, but it's a good option, especially if you're standing right outside a place to watch the parade. The city of New Orleans also provides portalettes along the route, and they're fine, but they don't get cleaned very often, and lines are definitely going to form, especially at the larger parades. This is also where that tip about packing your own toilet paper comes in real handy. Truthfully, the only time I can remember running into a problem finding a bathroom is at the most popular parades, and mostly on Saturday and Sunday night before Mardi Gras. On those nights, two of the largest parades, also known as Super Crews, hold their processions. Endymion is first on Saturday evening, with Bacchus holding the Sunday night slot. These parades attract enormous crowds who spend the day and sometimes even a couple nights before camped out securing their spot. And it's not unusual to have places along the route where the crowd is 20 or 30 people deep. As you might imagine, the lines to use the limited porta-potties can get quite long. All right, I want to move on to the next segment, and in this part, I want to talk a bit about the season. I mentioned this at the top of the show and on the last episode. Carnival begins on Twelfth Night and ends at midnight on Mardi Gras. After the couple parades on Twelfth Night, though, things calm down, parade-wise, until 2 weeks before Mardi Gras Day. Most locals refer to the weekend when parades get into gear as the first weekend of parade season. This is a fun time. The parades are not the largest or the most extravagant, but the crowds are reasonable and you get a good taste of carnival. It's a great weekend for families because you'll usually have some room to spread out and let the kids run around a bit. This year, there are 5 parades on Saturday and another 4 on Sunday. You won't see many costumes among the crowd, so if that's your thing, you really want to be here on Mardi Gras. But the first weekend is a really good intro to carnival and certainly a good time with the kids. I'm recording this late on Sunday night of the first weekend, and I think we saw a total of 5 parades between Saturday and Sunday. We had a great time. We ran into a bunch of friends. The kids ran into some friends, and they caught a ton of throws. They got a lot of beads, probably a dozen toys and stuffed animals of all varieties. The weekend, in many ways, this first weekend, has become my favorite part of carnival, especially as a dad. It's not the weekend to visit if you want to take part in the madness in the French Quarter, but I think it's a great option for everyone else. The next segment of the season is Wednesday and Thursday before Mardi Gras. These days have really amped up in recent years. Each of those nights has a top-notch parade and sometimes two. The crowds will be large and enthusiastic, but still navigable. On Wednesday, things kick off with the mystic crew of Druids, followed by the crew of Knicks. Druids traces its lineage back to an earlier parade of the same name, and this year, in 2016, they're going to be using some of the original floats from 90 years ago. The crew of Knicks is an all-female crew, and they're parading for only the 5th time, but they already have a membership of more than 2,200 women, making it one of the largest organizations in carnival. Knicks is named after the ultimate female deity in Greek mythology and is known for its hand-decorated purses. If you listened to the last episode of Beyond Bourbon Street, you learned about Zulu and the coveted coconuts. Knicks and the next organization we'll talk about, Muses, have borrowed from the Zulu tradition, creating hand-decorated specialty throws that have quickly become among the most sought-after prizes of the season. Thursday evening brings a trifecta of parades along the traditional uptown route. Leading off the evening are the Knights of Babylon. They were founded in 1939, and they adhere to the traditions of the older crews. Of note, their king's float is pulled by a mule instead of tractors used by most modern parades, and he's accompanied by flambeau to light his path. The Knights of Chaos follow Babylon, and this night of carnival used to be known as Momus Thursday. It was the domain of the Knights of Comus from 1872 until 1991 when they ceased parading. They stopped to protest a city council ordinance which required carnival organizations to disclose their membership, and you can hear more about that in Episode 3. But Momus ended their parade that year, and they had not returned. Instead, Chaos was formed in 2000. They purchased the Momus floats, and many former Momus members are in the Chaos organization. Next up is a crew of Muses. Like Knicks, they're an all-female crew. Muses was formed in 2000 and quickly became a hit. Their signature throw is the hand-decorated shoe, which is perhaps the catch to have after the Zulu coconut. Muses is named after the 9 daughters of Zeus, but they also have a New Orleans connection. Several streets in the Lower Garden District in uptown New Orleans are named after the Muses. And here's some insider knowledge. 3 of them are traditionally mispronounced by locals. Calliope, Terpsichore, and Melpomene. So Calliope becomes Callio, Terpsichore becomes Terpsichore, and Melpomene becomes Melpomene. So let's get back to the parade. This night, Thursday night, gets really large crowds, but it's great fun. In fact, you could arrive in New Orleans on Wednesday morning and leave Sunday or Monday and have had a wonderful carnival experience. Thursday is when you're also going to start to see the crowds build in the French Quarter. You'll be able to move around, and you might even be able to score a perch on the balcony. But tonight's the night if you want that experience and you don't want to be in a mass of people. All right, the next time period is the weekend before Mardi Gras. This is go time. Friday is when the French Quarter is going to close to vehicular traffic, and it's the last day I enjoy walking in the quarter until Mardi Gras morning. On Friday evening, you have a bundle of parades, starting with the crew of Hermes. They were founded in 1937, and Hermes is the carnival organization with the longest record of hosting a nighttime parade in New Orleans. They traditionally make great use of lighting, and they were the first organization to use neon lights on their floats in 1938. Today, even the riders' costumes are lighted. I also really like Hermes because they just have a great lineup of marching bands every year. Hermes is followed by one of my favorite parades, Le Coup d'État. Le Coup d'État was formed in 1996, and from their beginnings, they had the intention of reaching back to the satirical themes favored by some of the early organizations, such as Momus, which we mentioned just a minute ago. The crew of Morpheus rounds out the trio of parades on Friday evening, and Morpheus is a fun parade, and it's one of the few that are co-ed. This is changing a little bit, but most of the carnival organizations are either all male or all female. Before we move on, a note about the Uptown New Orleans parade route. Post-Katrina, there's been a move to consolidate parades onto what is known as the traditional route. This was done largely as a measure to make it easier for a cash-strapped police department to manage. Having multiple routes across the city was getting more and more difficult to handle effectively. And on the one hand, the negative effect is the loss of neighborhood parades. Additionally, moving the parades onto one route has added more people onto those paths. Personally, I also think some of those parades were just fine as a neighborhood parade, but they don't quite live up to the splendor of the larger parades that traditionally dominated the uptown route. This might just be the Mardi Gras snob in me coming out, but the reality, I guess, is any parade is as fun as you make it. I mean, in most other places in the world, people are cooking dinner, working, or doing normal everyday things. We're putting kids in parade ladders, grabbing a nice chest of beer, and heading out to enjoy a few hours of partying with new friends and old friends alike. The benefit of the consolidation on the routes has been an offshoot that's particularly notable on Friday evening. Several of the parades have moved physically further back, extending the traditional route back along Magazine Street towards Audubon Park. And this has been a terrific development. While Magazine is narrow, there's been a lot of construction on it for years now, it's lined with all kinds of shops and restaurants and bars. It's in a neighborhood and it feels like it, so it brings that neighborhood feel to the parade route. Magazine Street from the start at Jefferson is a terrific place to see the parades, and it's full of families enjoying themselves and each other. Even if you don't have kids, I'd encourage you to catch at least one parade on Magazine Street, anywhere between Jefferson and Napoleon Avenues. On Saturday, you have choices. If I were visiting and I didn't have kids, I would make Endymion the focus. It's a spectacle in every way possible. The crowds, the size, and the extravagance of the parade. It violates my earlier mention about the loss of the neighborhood routes as well. You see, Endymion starts in mid-city on the edge of City Park near Delgado Community College. On Orleans Avenue, which is the first leg, it's just a sea of humanity, and it's almost impossible to describe without seeing it. The houses along that route take great pride in celebrating Endymion, too. Many of them create custom banners welcoming Endymion. In fact, I saw one yesterday that said, "Hail Endymion," and it must have been 40 feet long. There's also a stage on the neutral ground hosting music throughout the day of the parade. And yet another feature in recent years is that the riders walk down Orleans Avenue before boarding their floats for the ride. When I was in my 20s, I helped co-host a party for 1,000 or more people each year, complete with porta-potties, many kegs of beer, and a raised viewing platform. We'd be out on that neutral ground by 7 a.m., and we wouldn't leave until 11 or 12 in the evening. Those days are long gone, but it was a lot of fun at the time. I mentioned earlier, but Endymion is known as a super crew. And while there's no formal definition, these are the largest organizations. Endymion has 3,100 all-male members in their crew. They continually create larger and larger floats. The biggest at present is a 9-section beast of a float celebrating Pontchartrain Beach, which is a now-defunct amusement park that was in New Orleans. This float holds 250-plus riders. Some organizations have 500 in their entire parade, and Endymion has 250-260 on one float. Endymion also has a celebrity grand marshal each year. It's one of the few crews that end their ride with a ball of sorts that's open to the public. Endymion literally parades right into the Mercedes Superdome, where the masked riders disembark from their floats and join thousands of guests who are dressed in formal wear. Music is on multiple stages and goes on until the early hours of Sunday morning. If you don't want to do Endymion, another option on Saturday is to go out earlier in the day. You can take in the all-female crew of Iris and the irreverent crew of Tux, whose monarch sits upon a throne. In that case, I mean a toilet on a float. So not a real toilet, a much larger-than-life papier-mâché toilet with a frame in it. It's really pretty funny to see. On Sunday, start your day with the crew of Toth. Toth is a large, wonderfully colorful daytime parade with a solid mission at heart as well. Besides entertaining the general population with the parade, they start their route at Children's Hospital. In the evening is Bacchus, named after the god of wine. Bacchus was founded in 1968 and was the first supercrew, introducing the idea of a celebrity grand marshal and a party open to anyone willing to pay an admission fee and dress up in their finest evening wear. Bacchus is extremely popular and draws really large crowds all along the uptown route, and it's a great time. But like Endymion, it's pretty crowded. So if you want to get out there, you want to get out pretty early, or you're going to be standing pretty far back. It's definitely worth seeing at least Endymion or Bacchus, if not both. So after Bacchus on Sunday, Monday is a day of recovery, but it's also a great time to visit the French Quarter. Known as Lundi Gras Monday, you can find a festival taking place along the riverfront at Waldenburg Park. You can hear some great local music, enjoy New Orleans food, and you can witness the arrival of the King of Zulu and his queen by boat on the river. That night offers two parades, and I think it's a perfect mix of new and old. The crew of Proteus leads off the evening. They were founded in 1882, and they're one of the oldest parades. The king's float has a distinctive seashell, and it is accompanied by flambeaux, the flaming torches that were used originally in the 1800s to light the way. After Proteus, Orpheus is a mere child in comparison. Orpheus was founded in 1994 by local boy made good Harry Connick Jr. You probably heard of him, right? Appropriately enough, he chose the name Orpheus to honor the god of music and as a tribute to his musical roots. Orpheus was formed to replace Proteus, who, like Momus, did not parade from 1993 to 1999 in protest of the Sydney Ordinance I mentioned. That ordinance, passed in 1992, required carnival organizations to disclose their membership, and so several crews that year stopped parading. Proteus, Momus, and Comus all stopped. Proteus came back, and nonetheless, Lundi Gras is now as good as ever with both the new and the old parading through uptown New Orleans. Last but not least is Mardi Gras, Fat Tuesday. The final day of carnival starts with the processions of Zulu and Rex, followed by the truck parades. The truck parades are made up of floats built on top of flatbed 18-wheelers. Each truck is really a carnival organization unto itself, mostly comprised of families. You'll see men, women, and children of all ages on these floats, taking part in the tradition of riding and offering throws to the crowd. Mardi Gras is also the day for families. Lots of costumes and an abundance of throws to beg for and to catch. It's really one big party, and it's much more family-oriented than television reports might have you believe. In fact, it's rare to even see anything too racy outside the French Quarter. If that's what you want, however, head over into the quarter early and be sure to catch the drag queen costume contest. It's absolutely incredible with over-the-top costumes. If wild and crazy Mardi Gras is what you've come to New Orleans to experience, this is where it's at. Enjoy the show, then wander up to Canal Street to see Zulu and Rex, then head back to join the flood of people on Bourbon Street celebrating the final hours of carnival. Both the day and carnival season ends with the meeting of the courts, Comus and Rex. At midnight, the chief of police and the mayor of the city of New Orleans ride down Bourbon Street on horseback, announcing the end of carnival and the beginning of Lent. 2 points to wrap up the show. First, how do we do it? As you've heard, the Beyond Bourbon Street family heads out the first weekend near the start of the route. Lots of time in the parade ladder and catching up with friends. We don't do too much during the week, though my wife or I might get out one night each with our friends. On the second weekend, we tend to avoid the big parades. We enjoyed them back before kids, but it's just too much for us with 4-year-old twins, and they don't really enjoy it. Instead, we hit the Friday night parades, then the daytime ones on Saturday and Sunday. On Mardi Gras, we're up and out on the route early. Usually we try to leave by 7:30 at the latest. Everyone is dressed in costume, and this year I think we'll have a Spider-Man and probably an Elsa. Dad will repurpose a wizard costume, And Mom, she's likely going to be a game time decision. It's a good thing about being New Orleanians, though. Everyone has a closet full of costumes and wigs at the ready. Last up, why Beyond Bourbon Street? As I hope you learned today, Mardi Gras and New Orleans in general is so much more than Bourbon Street debauchery. Sure, that can be part of your experience, but for the most part, it's contained in the French Quarter. Instead, when I think of the Mardi Gras I grew up with and the one my kids are living today, it's filled with memories of days spent on the neutral ground of St. Charles Avenue and the sidewalks of Magazine Street. I think about kids playing catch while their parents sip a beer and catch up with new and old friends alike. It's enjoying the celebration that New Orleans throws for itself each year. And I got sick of hearing the narrative portrayed on the national media, that of boobs and drunkenness. Yes, you can have it, but it's a small part of Mardi Gras, hence the name Beyond Bourbon Street. My goal is to provide you with the insight that comes from living and experiencing New Orleans as a local, as an insider. I try to do that for you each and every episode. This one ran long, but there was a lot to cover, and still I left out a bunch. I hope you enjoyed listening as much as I enjoyed sharing. And one more thing, if you're listening from afar, order a king cake and have a party at the office. Check out the parade cams on nola.com/paradecam, or log into wyes.org on Mardi Gras evening and watch the meeting of the courts of Comus and Rex. Enjoy a little bit of Mardi Gras wherever you are, and maybe you can join us next year. In the next episode, we'll discuss the history of the po' boy, and we'll also have our first interview with a special guest. I can't wait to share that one. If you enjoyed today's show, please do me a favor and leave us a rating on iTunes. If you want to hear more shows like this one, please subscribe. New episodes are available every other Wednesday, and you can find us at www.beyondbourbonst.com. Until next time, laissez les bons temps rouler.
Thanks for listening to the Beyond Bourbon Street podcast. Find us anytime at beyondbourbonst.com.